The partnership between WCCU Radio and the Star Tribune editorial board goes way, way back. We've jumped on board the last few years and enjoy it. We're jumping in right now with Patricia Lopez and John Rash, both on the phone line, both on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. John, I will start with you. Your outlet, many other media outlets, and then further confirmation from Amy Klobuchar about 40 minutes ago, saying that at some point this afternoon, most likely in a tandem press conference with Governor Walz, Keith Ellison will announce that the Derek Chauvin charge has been changed from third degree to second degree and will announce other charges for the three officers. What is your reaction to this decision?
It's quite significant from a legal as well as a social standpoint. Legally, having the charges upgraded against Derek Chauvin, and most profoundly, having the three other cops who did not intervene in the killing of George Floyd be charged is what so many have been calling for, and now there's a specific adjudication of what role each of them played and the degree that they played it, especially with the upgraded charges against Derek Chauvin, who had already had been charged. From a social standpoint, this is a signal to so many of the protesters, not just here in Minneapolis, but across the country, that there indeed will be a legal reckoning with what so many around the world have seen on that videotape on Memorial Day. And so certainly this, you know, may be, especially as the memorial service for George Floyd is set to happen tomorrow, you know, a way for people to realize there is a process, it is going to move forward, and hopefully this will be able to, you know, take some of the steam out of the more violent aspect of the protests and, you know, have people begin to let the process, you know, take its course at this point.
How about you, Pat?
Well, I'm just going to say this needed to happen. I think, you know, elevating it from third to second degree murder indicates how serious this case is. And it sends a big, broad message to everyone that they're going to do their utmost to bring all of these individuals to justice. And I think my guess is the protesters and the community at large will be particularly heartened that the other three officers are now going to be legally charged with aiding and abetting. I want to remind folks that Minneapolis police do have a duty to intervene. That was one of the requirements they adopted some time ago. So that this is something that is supposed to happen. Too often it doesn't. But now we will see, you know, a true in-depth examination of this case, and I think it's a good first step toward telling people that this is being taken very, very seriously.
Pat, last week on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I was very critical of Governor Walz, and in particular Jacob mm-hmm. Frey, not as much Melvin Carter. Mm-hmm. I thought Walz and Frey abdicated key parts. They were not visible at all, which is an essential part of handling a crisis. The state needs to hear from the two people involved. I thought they were not prepared for the number of protesters. I thought day after day, to me, by the time it's Thursday, Friday, that was unacceptable. I think both have improved. I think by Saturday and Sunday, in particular, Governor Walz responded with an enormous force, the most uh-huh. force we saw from the National Guard since World War II. I want you to go first, and then, John, you jump in. What was a fair assessment of those two and how they handled the key points of last week?
Well, I think it's fair to say that they're a little slow off the mark. I'm not sure why. I mean, given the flashpoints that we've had before, it was not unforeseeable that there would be a huge reaction to this, particularly the delay after, you know, when the three officers weren't arrested, when Derek Chauvin, there was, I think, several days that elapsed. They lost their jobs, but that in no way conveyed the gravity of the situation. I think there should have been police presence. earlier, that's something that still needs to, you know, go back and look at why there was not a stronger response when the most damaging part of the looting and actual rioting, as opposed to the peaceful protests, were going on. That's when the real damage happened. So I think that if there's some looking into, I think, you know, for the governor to ask, that's a statewide level. It's kind of understandable how that might take a day or two. Thursday was probably too late, but as you said, you know, they improved their response. They got on it. We're probably looking at another extension of the curfew today, and it looks like things are becoming a little more peaceful. That said, I think we need to look really carefully at the distinction that was made between peaceful protesters and violent destruction by rioting and looting. Those are two separate categories.
John, how about you? I realize this was an incredibly difficult challenge, and there was no perfect way to do it, and no one would have walked away and where everybody would have said, that was flawless, that was exemplary. No one could have approached it. I just don't understand, day after day last week, why the numbers were not included. I just look back by Wednesday, the numbers on Thursday and Friday should have been enormous, and Pat's point is very valid too. There had to be a key point how law enforcement dealt with peaceful protesters who are every bit within their rights to be out there compared to those who are out there just intent on harm and profiting themselves.
You know, it was extraordinary. There were two press conferences in 2 days that essentially had the same message, and they had to have the second one because the first one, they did not deliver upon it. And if you remember, there was a press conference with Governor Walz and John Harrington, and nearly everyone involved in this situation, except for the two mayors, and in particular, there seemed to be some pointed criticism, however oblique, of Mayor Fry of Minneapolis. And at that point, Governor Walz said that he owned this, and that it looked like with the call-up and specifically the direction that the National Guard was asked to take, that they were going to get on top of it. That did not happen, and in fact, things seemed to get worse the next night. Then the next morning, Saturday morning, they came together again. That was when we had the full call-up of the Guard, and there were the same reassuring words that were, in general, delivered upon that night. And since then, it's been a better situation, challenging and changing, no question about it, but it's been more in control since then. So what the disconnect between the proper diagnosis of the problem and the inability to solve it suggests that everyone involved underestimated the potency of these protests and the number of people who would be involved and the ability and willingness of some to let it spiral out of control. So I think that as time goes on, and there should be a really proper look at what happened, lest this unfortunate incident ever be replicated in some capacity, that the state knows how to better respond.
Yeah, I'd really like to see a closer examination of that decision to, you know, give up the third precinct. I thought that was extraordinary.
Yes.
And now it may be that some critical evidence was in the lockers of those police officers. I've never seen anything like that ever.
I'm with you 100%. Let's pause. I'll remind folks, this news has come out here the last few minutes. Probably doesn't surprise anyone. But Governor Walz has extended the nighttime curfew tonight and Thursday night from 10 to 4. The president and also his defense secretary, comments on those two gentlemen when we come back with John and Patricia on CCO. We recorded an interview earlier today with Justin Terrell, executive director, the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. He was a large part of the press conference yesterday when the governor announced the investigation from the Human Rights Department into the Minneapolis Police Department. We'll play that at 2:35. We're going to give you a little bit of the Department of Health update. We haven't carried it at all for a week or so because of George Floyd. We just want to touch in a little bit on that. We are still awaiting the Walz and potentially and Ellison press conference. It appears those might be together at 3 o'clock whenever they happen. You'll hear it here on CCO, most likely at 3 o'clock. We continue playing politics. John, I'll start with you. Patricia Lopez, also in the conversation. The defense secretary, Mark Esper, I think shocked a lot of people today, John, when he said at a briefing this morning that he does not support invoking the Insurrection Act, which the president has talked about, which permits the president to use active duty troops on U.S. soil in order to quell protests, a la what took place just outside the gates of the White House on a split screen when the president was showing how powerful he is. Will Mark Esper be the defense secretary, John, by Friday?
Well, I certainly wouldn't buy a long-term parking contract if I were him. From the White House secretary, press secretary today, she said, quote, "As of now, Secretary Esper is still Secretary Esper. And should the president lose faith in him, we will all learn about that in the future," which is saying nothing and saying everything at the same time. And that doesn't suggest that he holds the president's confidence. And, of course, you know, he is one in a series of defense secretaries that has served in the Trump administration. He was acting press secretary for some time, and we may have another. It's rare that the official, and credit to Mr. Esper, has the courage to so publicly disagree with the president. It's even more rare that those that do stick around for very long, and he doesn't take his slights well and often has immediate or eventual retribution against such individuals. So, you know, I think right on the issue, and even if he's wrong on the politics, he should stick to his principles and say what he believes. And we'll have to see, and as President Trump often uses as a phrase, what happens from there.
Yeah. Pat, give me your thoughts on when you witnessed
the
president and the speech, and also just your thoughts on what Esper had to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to give him any credit for any particular courage. I think he probably found out from those below him that he doesn't have the standing to do that. And would probably face a widespread revolt among his own forces if he continued to support that. I think, you know, I would have had more admiration for him if he had just drawn the line earlier and told the president, no, you cannot use the military to clear peaceful protesters out from a church, tear gassing them and the priest who was with them for a photo op, and then deny that he knew what the photo op was about, and then be forced to walk that back. It's just a clown show at this point, and it so undermines the credibility of our federal officials at a time when it is most needed. It is just a really disheartening and even frightening thing to witness. And now we have unidentified troops, some sort of militia that has been guarding areas out there that have no insignia on them and still don't know exactly who they are. It's just incredible.
John, what's your view about the attacks on the press, the physical attacks on the press that took place last week during the protest, including a former employee here, Jared Goyet, who's part of a lawsuit against what was taking place when well-qualified reporters were hit and harmed during the protest of last week?
It's as pervasive a problem as attacks on African Americans and some of the other deep-seated issues that are manifest in so many police departments across the country. All of us join in admiration for those who are willing to protect and serve in the truest sense and be part of their communities. What they have been doing to reporters across the country, nearly 200 documented cases of police officers, or in some states, you know, either National Guard troops or state patrol officers, deliberately targeting reporters with extraordinary violence. And these are local reporters, national reporters, international reporters. This has been horrifying from a human rights perspective here at home and our ability to project and protect press freedoms around the world. Indeed, there is a lawsuit from the ACLU with the individual whom you just named as the lead plaintiff. There is a remarkable number of cases that they cite in here in Minneapolis. But again, mm-hmm. It's across the country. And what's so chilling about it is that the same three words are often used across the country when those who are attacked clearly identify themselves as members of the press, show a badge, say I'm with the Associated Press or Australian News or CNN or the Star Tribune or WCCO, and the officers involved say, I don't care, and then they proceed with their attack. So this is a big problem, and it's one that needs national leadership. It does not help when the President of the United States takes 3 years in calling the press the enemy of the people. That is going to be pervasive with many people.
Yeah, I got to jump in. I'm already past the heartbreak, unfortunately. We'll get back to it again, I promise.